Speechware Document 46. Enforcement of Law and the Railways. From an address delivered in Memphis, Tennessee, before the Deepwaterway Convention, October 4, 1907. It ought not to be necessary for me to repeat, but I shall repeat, that I shall enforce the law, just as quickly against the poor man who goes wrong as against the rich man, but no quicker. Whenever I have the power, I will use every resource of this nation to stamp out murderous and lawless violence of the kind that breeds the anarchy of which you, Governor Patterson, spoke. And I shall no more stay my hand, if the wrongdoer masquerades as a labor leader, than I shall stay my hand, if he masquerades as a captain of industry. I have expressed myself once definitely in the subject of undesirable citizens, and I stand by what I said, alike, when the undesirable citizen is a great capitalist who wins a fortune by chicanery and wrongdoing to the hurt of his fellows and the damage of the public conscience, and when he is a man who, under the guise of standing for labor, preaches and encourages violence and murder. I think that my position has at least the merit of being easily understood. Before closing, let me say a word upon the subject of the regulation of the railways by Congress under the Interstate Commerce Clause of the Constitution. In my judgment, the old days of happy-go-lucky indifference in the part of the public to the conduct of the corporations have passed. The American people has made up its mind that the conditions of modern industrialism are such as imperatively to demand supervision in the interest of the people as a whole over these great corporations. Most emphatically, we should do full justice to them, but in return we should exact justice from them to the public. Some of them have become so habituated to disregarding everything but their own wishes and interests that the effort to establish a proper supervision over them has aroused in their part a curiously unreasonable antagonism. Their spokesmen do not seem to be aware that in what we have been trying to do we have not been improperly radical, using the word in its right sense. We have been conservative. We have merely taken the first steps in a policy which must be permanent, if our democratic institutions are to endure, while, as a matter of course, we must also keep ever in mind that it is exactly as injurious to true democracy to inflict, as tamely to suffer, wrong. We can no more tolerate injustice to the railroads than injustice by them. One course is as immoral and as fundamentally mischievous and injurious to the people as the other. In the matter of supervision of the great railway corporations we are acting, as all civilized governments have already acted or are on the point of acting. The unrestricted issue of railway securities without any supervision, and under circumstances which often result in the gravest scandal, should not be permitted, and only by governmental action can it be prevented. It is already thus prevented in England and Germany, for instance. In England, the first Royal Commission of Railways, of which that great parliamentary and popular leader, William Ewart Gladstone, was chairman, set forth, as fundamental the very principles which here have at last been enacted into law, or which, as I firmly believe, will speedily be enacted. Of course, in any movement like this in which we are now engaged, in any movement looking to the regulation of vast corporate wealth engaged in interstate business, and to the cutting out of all abuses connected therewith, there will at times be suffering in which, unfortunately, many innocent people will be involved. But such suffering of the innocent is unavoidable in every great movement of life. Able and unscrupulous men are sure to deceive certain innocent outsiders and persuade them to invest in ventures under conditions which render loss certain when the force of the law is asserted. I am exceedingly sorry for these innocent people, but it is not possible, because of them, to refuse to proceed against the men who have victimized them. It is just such a case as would occur if an unscrupulous man with counterfeit money visited some remote village, spent his money, and then disappeared. The local innkeeper and livery stable keeper, the shopkeeper and the neighboring farmer, would all have been victimized. They would have lodged and fed the man, have supplied him with goods from the store and the farm, have hired horses and wagons to him, and in return would find themselves loaded with counterfeit money. If, under such circumstances, the government found out what had happened, it would have no alternative save to stop the circulation of the counterfeit money, though those possessing it were innocent. It would, of course, try to secure the conviction of the thief, but if he had escaped the jurisdiction of the law, it would nevertheless be impossible to let his innocent victims continue to pass as by no means innocent counterfeit money. Well, just the same thing is true when it comes to enforcing the law against businessmen of great wealth who have violated it. People are always beseeching me not to enforce it against them, because innocent outsiders may be hurt, or only to enforce it with a gentleness that would prevent anybody, good or bad, from being hurt. It is not possible to comply with such requests, even when they are made in good faith. This is a government of law, a law which applies to great and small alike. I am sorry indeed when it happens that big men who do wrong have involved smaller men with no bad intentions to such an extent that they suffer when we force the undoing of the wrong. But we cannot hold our hands for such a consideration. The responsibility for the suffering of those innocent outsiders lies not with us who put a stop to the wrong and punish the wrongdoers, but with these wrongdoers who mislead their victims. In conclusion, friends, let me impress upon you one thing. Good laws can do much good, indeed, they are often indispensable. There is urgent need that we should have honest and efficient legislation, and honest and efficient action by those whose province it is to put the legislation into effect. But there is infinitely more need of a high individual average of character. The only permanent way to help any man is to help him to help himself. To teach him permanently to depend in anything save his own powers is to do him harm and not good. Let no man persuade you that laws by themselves, no matter how necessary and beneficial, will make any community happy and prosperous, or be even the chief factors in securing such happiness and prosperity. In the last analysis, the vital factor in each man's effort to achieve success in life must be his own character, his own courage and uprightness and intelligence. In this audience are many men who wore the gray in the great Civil War. In every audience I have spoken to on this trip there have been men who fought in either the Union or Confederate Army, and often representatives from both armies. Now, you men know that, while in time of war there is need of good generalship, need of good organization, yet the determining factor in the regiment, the brigade, the army, is, and must ever be, the individual character of the individual soldier, his prowess, his hardihood, his unyielding resolution, his stern fidelity to duty, his capacity to act on his own individual responsibility when necessary, and yet to serve over or under or with others in perfect harmony and obedience. It is the character of the man in the ranks which primarily determines the failure or success of battle and campaign. In the great Civil War our armies, northern and southern alike, won their high position forever and all time in the undying regard and admiration of their fellow citizens, because the average man in the ranks, the average man who carried saber or rifle, had this high standard of personal quality. Just as it was in time of war, so it is now in time of peace. If a man has not got the right stuff in him, then no law can possibly get it out of him, because it is not there to get out. All that the law can do is to punish evil, to encourage what is good, and to secure, so far as is possible, an equality of opportunity for all men to show their strength of body, mind, and soul in the hard struggle of life.